So, I remember my first love, before I was introduced to girls. I had one beforehand. It was an orange ball. I woke up in the morning, me and my basketball, we said Moda'ani together, I gave it a kiss. We had breakfast together, the Wheaties of course, that's what Michael Jordan ate. We went to school together, we dribbled, we talked, we laughed, we cried, it was wonderful. And since the moment that I can remember, the thing that was with me the most until I graduated high school, that's for sure, was that basketball. And if you're a basketball fan, you know that all the months are wonderful, but there is one month that stands above the rest. What am I talking about? March. Why? Because mid-March, there's a tournament called the NCAA tournament. And what happens there is all the schools from all over the country get together and they play the most intense, heart-provoking, crying ball of all time. And you get to leave school, you leave early, and you can watch ball till 2 o'clock in the morning. You talk about it the next day. It is a dream for a basketball fan. And today, even though I don't have the time, I don't really watch anymore. Something amazing happens. I could be sitting at my desk and February, and I look back at the calendar a few days later, and it's March. And something instinctively triggers inside me, and I go, March. It's just, I smile. My first reaction, and when I go, it's got to be a great month, because it's madness. It's March. If we would have to rank Jewish holiday, Jewish months, as to where would Elul fall out on the yes category, where would it be? 10, 11, or 12, or 13. It's not even on the list. I have never been in a shul once when the chazan goes Rosh Chodesh Elul and the crowd goes yes. Never. It's the groan that we have when it's sleep. No one ever walks. I grew up, and when I moved out of Brooklyn, I moved to Queens. Down the block from Queens was St. John's. I remember when the practice is allowed to have, when a college is allowed to have practice, it's called Midnight Madness. That first day they have a practice at midnight. I remember Midnight Madness. Contrast that to Saturday night. Slichos is like, here we go. Here we go again. Like one guy said to me, I just can't wait for the last L'David to be done with. Then we go back to our regular lives. The no tachanun days, post Yom Kippur, pre Sukkot, are the sweetest days of the year. Right? Except for the Beis Nisan, which is the greatest day of all time, because then you get a month of no tachanun. And if you think about how we feel about this month, we're like at the goal line. We're at before Rosh Hashanah. How are we feeling inside? Like, what's going on really? What are the natural reactions that we have? Anxiety? Worry? Guilt? We're not good enough? Here we go again? I got to say a whole bunch of Hebrew words that I don't know what I'm saying, but I'm going to say them anyways because there's the book of life and the book of death, and I'm not really sure which one, what the book of life is, but I know it's better than death. I'm going for life. It's like when you're a Jew, if it's free, you just take 2. I'll get on the line. It's totally fine. I don't know what they're giving out. I'll just take 2, one for me and my wife. It's okay. And we go through almost this like motion where we just come in here and it's like we make a deal with God. It's like Amazon spiritual shopping. You need stuff, I need stuff. I need health, happiness, money, and like, you know, my kids to get married. Here's what you want. You need me to say prayers. You got it. Blow a horn. I'll blow a horn. I'm going to fast. You got it. I'll fast. Sit in a booth, shake a branch, throw my pockets into the water. Whatever you fuck you want me to do. Click, 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 click. Yours. And then at the end, when the window closes, that Motzei Yom Kippur, we hope and pray. And we assume, book of life. And then we go home and think to ourselves, best night of the year. Why is Motzei Yom Kippur the best night of the year? Because it's the longest part on the calendar to the next Yom Kippur. Am I wrong? So if you think about how we feel, it's a sense, maybe I can say out loud, of negativity. It's the opposite of March. But if you look in Chazal, you see something totally different. Chazal is prepping us for Elul. Elul is the prep for Tishrei. The real prep is not Rosh Hashanah. The real prep is Elul. And when Chazal talks about Elul, what they say is that Elul stands for a certain acronym. This is probably the most popular acronym in all of Torah. Elul stands for, we've heard it before, Ani Ledodi V'Dodi Li. But if you think about what that means in English, it's insane. I am for my beloved, and my beloved is for me. That's a love poem. It's Shir HaShirim. If it had like rock music behind it, we wouldn't be allowed to even listen to it. It's so lovely. I am for my beloved? Could it be that Elul is about love? Anyone here a lawyer? You know, I'm in business, but I remember being a lawyer. When I first started, I had a client Before he went to trial, let me tell you what I was not prepping him with. Love. It was fear, tough guy. Don't go out. Don't say anything. You're standing in front of a trial judge. Don't even have a steak sandwich. For the rest of this week, you're getting ready. Fear, anxiety. Chazal say, not you. Love. The sign, the consolation of the month of Elul is the Besula, the maid, the maiden, the bride. Historically, what's happening right now? Historically, God gave Jews the Torah. They sinned on Shavuot Arba Tamuz. The Gemara in Shabbos says it was as if they were like Mizana B'Sofu Pasa, as if they were committed adultery. And today, Elul, for this entire month, Moshe is in heaven doing marriage therapy. They're great, and you're great. Bring in the marriage back with an Asam Shabbos. This whole month is a month about love. But like romance. So how come we don't feel it? And how do we get there? Because we are about to walk in to the day where Daddy comes home. And I got to tell you one thing. The one thing we know about Rosh Hashanah is that Rosh Hashanah is the time where God is close. All the other stuff we do comes through that. But the one principle we have about this period of time is Dirshu Hashem Behimatz'o Karu B'Yosel Krov. He is close. And any parent of them know what I'm talking about. If you go visit your kids in Israel or college and you show up and they look in your eyes and they go, "Ah, you here?" You're like, "Seriously? We're visiting you for visiting day and this is what we get? I'm here for 1 week in January?" And you don't even tell your parents. You can't. Your instinctual reaction when you see me once a year is not overjoyed. And so this is happening to us. In a few hours, God's going to come close and he's going to stand in front of a lot of Jews. And our first reaction to, "Oh, here we go. Daddy's home. I got to say stuff and do stuff. Feel guilty all the time." How do we get to the love? How do we get to the excitement? How do we get to the place where we walk in this Rosh Hashanah? And when that Maariv starts and Rosh Hashanah kicks off, and Daddy comes home, our instinctive reaction is death. Because I tell you one thing. My kids, when my key hits the door, and I open the door, and they say, "Daddy's home!" I don't care what they did. It's my wife's fault. That's for sure. Then she goes, "You know what your kids only said? That was burned in the house." I'm like, "Well, maybe you should parent them better. Because they're saying Daddy's home. They must be perfect. Look at that. They're holding on to my life. What kind of kid could be dead holding on to Daddy's life? Who here wants candy? You can stay up whenever you want. No problem." How? Let's talk about love. Chazal says something amazing about love. We know what love is from all the Hollywood stuff, but Chazal and Torah speak very different about what is love. We know the pasuk, "V'yahavta l'reicha kamocha." But the pasuk is amazing, because it doesn't make any sense. V'yahavta is a command. You have to love, you are obligated to love. How can we obligate somebody to feel? Judaism is an obligated motion. There's no place in the sitter where you're davening and it's like, you're doing good. You can get a sniffle, excellent. Cry, tear, good, 3 steps back, exit left, book of life. That's not how it works. There's no regulation of emotions there. I feel the way I feel. But they're commanding you to love. The way I thought, you're beloved. Come on, come. Like you. I have to love everybody like me. Me and me spend a long time together. I wake up with me, I go to bed with me, I spend a lot of time with me. How in the world can I really, if I'm being straight with myself, possibly be commanded to love somebody the way I love myself? I would like to learn love from the place we learned it first. Our parents. Because if you look at every relationship in the world, the only one that makes no sense is parent to child. You know what I'm talking about? I don't understand why we have more than one kid. One kid family, I would understand. More than that, it doesn't make any sense. You have children, you give your whole life to them. Everything. From the diapers and the cribs, and then schools, and then friends, and you're worried, and you're going your entire life. Is you're giving, and finally they get married by the Ufruf, and then maybe by the Ufruf, they're like, "Hi, oh, thank you to my rabbis, thank you to my best friends, oh, and thank you, mom and dad, for everything." And I was like, "Oh, you are welcome, yes, for sure, yes." And she turns to her husband, she goes, "What? Hakaras hatol? I gotta thank you." Right? And then if you call her, I call my mother Friday afternoon, and she's like, "Charlie, thank you so much for calling me." I'm like, "I am the best son ever. That was 47 seconds on the cell phone." You know what I'm saying? And then if I call her on a Tuesday, she's like, "Oh, you called me on a Tuesday?" And I'm like, "Yeah. Can you babysit?" Am I wrong? I don't know why we have them for. It's one way forever. But yet, there's something about parents
that drives our screen about our kids. I'll tell you a great story.
I wrote a story in a book a few years ago.
The story about a guy gets on a train. One Thursday afternoon, Amtrak train from New York to Washington. Gets on the train, train's jam-packed, businessman. He's like, oh, I gotta stand in the hallway to Washington. And he looks around and he sees that there's one seat that's open, an aisle seat. So he goes right up to it and he realizes when he gets to the aisle, see why it's open for him. Because at the window is some kid who's tripping out. He's got bags, he's got stuff under his eyes, he's got a hood over his head. He's biting his nails. And the guy wants to turn away. And the minute he turns away, the kid looks at him and he feels he doesn't want to embarrass him. So he flips his seat. And the train goes all aboard and the train starts going. And he opens up his journal and his Wall Street Journal, staring at the kid, looking at the journal, staring at the kid. 5 minutes in, he goes, can I help you, son? Are you okay? You need some medication? He goes, buddy, don't even stop. Okay. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, he goes, are you sure? He goes, I don't even want to tell you what's going on in my head because you never believe me, so just forget it. He goes, listen, I'm staring at you anyways the entire time. Give me something to think about. So he goes, okay, I'll tell you my story, but you're not even going to believe me. He goes, I grew up in a small town right outside Baltimore. And where I grew up when I was a little kid, I had no friends. Nobody. And one day my parents, they were both teachers. They came home, they spent all their money, and they got me a personal computer. It just had come out. Very beautiful. I mean, it had come out already, but we were too poor to really have it. So I'm in the house, and all I really care about are the Orioles, and I watch my Orioles every day and every night. And my computer, I'm playing on it, and I'm studying it, and I'm going through creating programs from it. One day, I'm at Thanksgiving, and my friend comes over, my cousin comes in from New York, and he's so cool, he's so not like me, he's got clothes, he's got his friends, sits on my bed, he goes, what do you do with your life? And I said, nothing, the Orioles. And what I did was, I love watching stats. So what I did was, I created a computer program that like automatically updates stats for all the players. He goes, you did what? He goes, yeah. Why don't we start a .com? He goes, what's a .com? He goes, you stick with me, we're going to be rich. So my cousin went back up to New York. He created some thing where you pay to use my computer on every monthly basis. I didn't believe it. But one day I went to school in the ninth grade, and I got a check in the mail for $50. And the next day, another $50. And then $100. 200, 300, 400, 500. I'm making $1,000 a week, every just coming and coming and coming. All of a sudden, I had all these friends. I go to the mall, it's on me, and everyone came with me. And my parents said to me, if you like computers, study. You can really be good at computers. I turned to them and go, what do you know about being a parent? I make more money than both of you put together. Why don't you pair with the other kids? I'll take care of myself. Not week after week, I come home later, fight more, yell louder. Finally, after a year, I turned to them and said, you know what? I'm done with you people. I can handle myself. Took my knapsack, took my checks, got on a train, went to New York City. Got a beautiful apartment downtown, furnished it, parties on me, and every night, every week was an adventure. And one day my cousin walks into my house. I'll never forget the look in his eyes. He sits down, and he says to me, he goes, can you do anything else? I said, what? Do you have any other programs? I said, oh, I got one program. He goes, I got some bad news. He goes, what? He goes, the program that we charge for is now free online. Game over. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, it's over. $1,000 a week, $500 a week, $40, $200, $150, and just like that, I rose, I fell. And then I sold my stuff in my apartment, I sold my sofas and my televisions. I tried to get a job, but I couldn't get a job. I had no education. I tried to work in McDonald's. I couldn't sit. I had nothing. I went to the streets. I went to the subways. I tried to play guitar. I begged on the corners. And finally, after all of this, I put all the money I possibly had, and I bought a train ticket from New York to Washington. And I sat down in Washington Square Park, and I wrote a letter. I said, dear Mom and Dad, I know I've been probably the worst son to parent, and I know that you probably don't want me around, my brother and sister, but I'm down and out. And I'm on a train from New York. I'm taking a train from New York to Washington, D.C. And I remember that near Baltimore, there's this big tree. And if, as we come close, if you want me home, put one white flag on the tree. If you don't, I'll just take the train past Baltimore. I'll go straight down to Washington and try to start a life again. So the man says, what'd they say? And the kid says, I'm on the train right now. So the man starts fidgeting and biting his nails. And the train turns, and as the story goes, the conductor says, next stop, Baltimore. and the train keeps on going and going and going, and as it goes further, it turns this long turn, which right around the turn you can see the tree, and as the train continues to make the turn, the kid's looking outside the window at some point, he goes, I can't look, and he puts his head down, he goes, will you look for me? He goes, I will look for you, and the train comes right around the bend, and it passes the tree, and the kid goes, so? And the guy says, they didn't leave a white flag. He goes, what? The train pulls in, as he picks up, he says, he sees that the entire tree is covered in white cloth. The train pulls into the station with two older people with tears in their eyes and their arms wide open. What is it about parents that make us crazy about our children? No matter where they go or what they do, we're always defending them, we're always behind, no matter what it is. You'll have Mrs. Jeffrey Dahmer's mom in the stand. They'll be like, well, you know, my son, Mrs. Dahmer, your son killed 150 people. Well, he cuts very nicely. Maybe he could be a butcher. What's the big deal? My mother spent 6 years of her life in Flatbush's principal's office for one. He'll be a lawyer one day. He gave up being a doctor. That was a big problem. What is it about parents? No matter what it is, we give, we care, no matter what's going on. It's one way. Because parents have something inside. The minute they know that they're conceiving a child, before they even meet the kid, just the fact, you know it's like when you come back from that first sonogram, remember those four sonograms? You come home with a picture of an alien. You know what I'm saying? It's like a beating heart in the middle of swimming nothing. And you're like, is this adorable or what? You see, there's like two feet, it's two toes. Oh, look how cute these toes are. They don't even know the kid. Something is triggered in the mind of the parent. What is that? It's called commitment. In their heart, they say, I don't know what's going to be, but this kid is my kid. Top a lady on the street who's pregnant and go, oh, B'Shat Tova. And she goes, thank you. What's it, a boy or girl? She goes, I don't know. You go, okay, problem with the in-laws. I'm not going to get involved. We're totally fine. Are you going to love it? She goes, what? What if it's not cute? What if it's a brat? What if, like, the neighbor's kid is cuter? You're going to love this way, crazy. You'll never have mom come home and be like, with her 3-year-old son, and go, honey, come here for a second. Can we have a conversation? Yeah, come here. So put the toys down. This isn't working out, me and you. We gave it a go. You know what I'm saying? I like you. It's me, not you. So, just, you know what? We're going to separate for a little bit. We'll get together for yontifs, and the neighbor's kid's going to move in. Ever.
Parents have something in their minds called
that kid is a part of them. That kid, no matter what, no matter when, even before I meet them, something happens when we walk into the hospital and they put them in our hands for the first time. We look down and say, I don't care. I just met you a second ago. I will jump in front of a train for you for no other reason other than you exist. I don't love you if. I don't love you when. I am fully committed. That, Chazal says, if you want to understand true love, it's not Hollywood love. It's not with the beautiful music and the credit comes up right before they actually get married and you're walking somewhere and you get hit by Cupid and you look over and she looks over to you and the music plays and everything is great. That is what you do for me, love. That is how you make me feel love. That is what I am getting out of the relationship, love. For parents, it starts off in the way Torah says, which is, I am committed to you. Period. And when you have via hafta, something crazy happens to us. We start to identify with it. You ever notice that? Our kids aren't separate from us. They're not incompetent. We don't compete with our children. You ever play the game when you bring the baby home from the hospital for the first time? You know what I'm talking about? You bring home, they look like aliens. They all look exactly alike. You don't even know, if they didn't put tags on their feet, you'd bring the wrong kid home. Right? They all look exact. You bring them home and everyone comes home and they go, oh! Totally my side of the family. This is so-and-so's nose, this is an ear. And it's like they play a game of who can name the alien closer. Why do we do this for? Let the kid be the kid. Because we identify. I'm going to tell you a funny story. My background is, my father comes from Aleppo, Syria. My mother comes from Munkach, which makes me a walking United Nations with better resolutions, right? Half of what I eat has rice, the other half has margarine. That's my life. I'll never forget when my first son was born. My grandfather, who should have come to the calls me over, take a walk with him. My grandfather is seeing his great-grandson survive the Holocaust. This is the greatest joy of my life. I can walk my Holocaust-surviving grandfather to a nursery to point out his first great-grandson. So I'm sitting there, and he looks into the thing, and he goes, "Charlie, you see that boy?" I said, "Yes." He says, "You see his nose?" I said, he goes, "That's a Mooncatcher nose." Don't tell me otherwise. I know Mooncatch. I know noses. That is a Mooncatcher nose. I said, "Okay." Walks over, the nurse bangs on the door, goes, "Bang, bang, bang. Can I help you?" He said, "Harari." She goes, "Harari on the other side." Why do we do this for? Why is it my wife calls up and says, "Charlie, come home quickly, your kids are burning the house." And my response is, "That is right, they're burning the house. That's my kid. Call my mom and see, then you know what it's like to raise me." Why do we identify with them? Why do we win when they win? Why do we smile when they smile? Because the feeling of love that we're identifying, what Chazal is teaching us, what true love is, the word in English, love, corresponds to a feeling called lekumot. What we're after is not how you make me feel. Love is not attraction or lust or desire. That's not the Hebrew term love. Ahava has the word, according to Rav Dessler, in his famous work, Kuntras HaChesed, has the word, in the middle of ahava is the word hav. Hav is to give. According to Yiddishkeit, true love is once we commit. It's only in the process of giving, then something happens to us. We have this spiritual type feeling that I can't describe, that we've all felt, of we are one, it's yichud. I'm not separate from you. I don't compete with you. I'm not threatened if you have more than me, if your kids get married before mine do, if you have more money than I do, if your house is bigger than mine. I don't feel threatened when I walk in the room and see you. You're mine. And the goals, that's what happens in marriage, is why the famous story where Avi Levine walked into the doctor, his wife was having a footache, was Dr. Our Foot Hurts. Because the essence of marriage is yichud, basar echa. The essence of Klal Yisrael is yichud, we're supposed to be one. How do you become one? Commitment. And through commitment, it leads to identification. The biggest mistake we make during this period of time is that we think that what God is after is perfection. God also wants us to be perfect. We stand in front of him and we go, "Oh, I'm sorry, and I'm sorry, and I'm sorry, and I'm sorry, and I'm sorry." And we feel that somehow, I don't know how we get this, we feel that our choices for this period of time is D or F. Benoni, Russia. Benoni, Russia. D, F. Tzadik, please, Charlie, stop. I remember what you did in Flatbush. I don't think so. Not even a chance. But maybe if you're good and scream loud enough and really, really, really try, maybe I'll let you be a bane on me. Maybe I'll let you get a D and I won't have to zap you and send you to hell with the rest of everybody. And we walk into this period of time, year after year, with the same stuff. D or F. Bane on me, Russia. Bane on me, Russia. And we hope and pray that maybe we can be a bane on me. A tzaddik, an A student, beloved, stop. That's for the rabbis. I read about them in the Shabbos when I open the books and read about the people that never once committed a sin. I am not that. And so, of course, this period of time for us is daunting. Because we don't feel any love from him, because we're not the apple of his eye. This is the period of time where we make the biggest mistake, is that we think that this is about perfection. Perfection is about actions. This is not about perfection. He is not about perfection. He is never about perfection. If he was about perfection, he would have chosen Yishai to be Melech HaMashiach and not his son David. Because Yishai was perfect and David was not. But David had something else that Yishai didn't have. What God's really looking for, which is commitment. We don't need our spouses to be perfect. We don't need our children to be perfect. We don't need our parents to be perfect. You know what we need them to be? Committed. The problems are when they do something and we think that their actions are showing the lack of commitment. That's what drives us crazy. And as soon as we find out that there wasn't like that, it was a mistake, it all becomes okay. Because what we want from them is them. When you walk down that aisle, you do not turn to your spouse and go, "You've got the most perfect person." You know what you say? You have me. I may not be perfect, but I am yours forever. Period. When you bring that kid home from the hospital, you say, "I'm not the most perfect person, but I'm your father and I'm your father. I'll do anything for you, but you get me. I am committing myself to you." God looks at us every year and goes, "I don't want your perfection. I built into the system you're saying I'm sorry because I know you're not perfect. If I wanted you to be perfect, I would have stripped away your body and floated you up to the sky and turned you into an angel. They're perfect. I am asking you for one thing.
commit. Be committed to me.
Stand in front of me and look me in the eye and say, I am not perfect, but I am yours.
You think I built this? You think this is my body and my life? You think I have the bracha that you gave me? Of course not. I know the bigger picture. I know you're in this world. I don't see you all the time because it's dark outside. And I'm busy because I have work. I don't have the luxury to sit all day and study. But I know enough to know that you're in charge of the world and you're my father. And guess what? I am yours. I am yours.
That is Rosh Hashanah.
That is Elul. It's about Ani L'Dodi. L'Dodi L'Dodi.
Which is why, what is the symbol of Rosh Hashanah? What is the one, this is the one symbol that is maybe the most popular symbol in Judaism.
What is that?
The shofar. I don't know who the shofar's agent was, but he does a phenomenal job. Because if there's one symbol in all of Yiddishkeit, the one that was the one that got us the Torah, not Torah, the one that's going to herald in the Mashiach, and the one that says the Rosh Hashanah, and the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, it says, you blow the shofar, and I will see it as if you sacrifice yourself in front of me.
Your Shana is not even called Rosh Hashanah. What's it called?
Yom Teruah. Another time it's called Zichron Teruah. The entire concept of Rosh Hashanah centers around shofar.
Does that make any sense?
Wow. Remember the story of Avraham? He goes up to kill his son. Right?
Can you picture the music, the pumping,
the knife goes up, he ties the kid up, and knife goes up, and God says, whoa, we're good.
And he goes, no, we're good. Put that knife down, put it down, take 5 steps back, put your hands behind your back, read you the rights. Drops the knife. What does he do then? It's over. The tension is done. He's not killing his son anymore. The trial has been passed. Then what happens?
He looks around and finds a ram. And shucks the ram. The shofar wasn't even in the story. The shofar was in the post-credits. You want to tell me a symbol that shows our love to you? You want to tell me the symbol that brings back the story of the Akedah?
You're bringing me over what happened post-credits? Give me a knife. Give me some rope. Give me something that when I look at him and go, oh my God, he held the knife and almost killed him.
The shofar was after he knew he didn't have to kill him. Why in the world would God be giving... Why would he be paying blood on the shofar?
So don't understand this, you understand the story. The story is amazing.
Avraham Avinu started his life believing in God. He went all in on God. And what he did his whole life, he bet it, and finally it got to a point in his life, after jumping into a Kipshana Aish, leaving here and trying to back, he finally, at the end of his life, and it worked. He bet on Google early and never paid off. He's got money, he's got a yeshiva, he's got his son, he's got his wife. It's working. His entire career was built on one thing, monotheism. What was he fighting against at the time? Idolatry. What was the idolatry at the time? Something called the Molech. What did the Molech do? Sacrifice children. Avraham's entire career is built on one mantra. Don't kill your kids. He grows up, he wins Time Man of the Year, he smiles to the picture and goes, don't kill your kids. He gets an award, don't kill your kids. Op-ed pieces, don't kill your kids. His whole life, don't kill your kids. Here's this guy, at the end of his life, he's finally made it. He's got his kid, he's got his yeshiva. Everyone knows it, he respects it. He's the guy that doesn't kill kids. And God shows up one morning and goes, hey Avraham, how are you? And he goes, I'm doing good, how are you doing? He goes, wonderful. He goes, oh, I need something. He goes, yeah, whatever you want. Latte, whatever. No, okay. He goes, I need your kid. He's like, what do you need it for? He's like, no, I need to kill your kid. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. No, I don't really speak Hebrew yet. What are you talking about? His high priest said, you need to kill my kid. You need to kiss my kid. Yeah, he's yours. Then you kill the kid.
This is game over. You lose every... Avram's not just killing the kid. He comes down with that now and he is done. When he comes down, cameras, snap. Hypocrite of the century. His yeshivas, his reputation, his physical legacy and his child, his spiritual, his whole life. God says, you're committed?
Hebrew, nes, is not a nisayon is not a test.
The nisayon in Hebrew. Test is how we treat it. The nes, son nes, it elevates you, it grows you, it's exercise.
God is testing one skill, which is why it's Rosh Hashanah, because this is the whole purpose of Rosh Hashanah.
God, you are seriously? You're testing my commitment? Don't you know I know you run the world? I'm judging you. I'm questioning you. It's yours. all of it. And God says, really? An enormous amount. And Abram says, it's yours. Don't you get it? It's like bringing my kid home from the hospital. It's like walking down the aisle with my wife. It's like looking at the woman that I've been married to for 50 years. I look in your eyes and say, it's about you. It's not about me. It's never about me. It's about your happiness and your life. I want it to be about you. And God says, stop. I get it. And Abram says, no, you don't. He goes, yes, I do. Abram says, I need to show you. And God says, I get it. Abram says, I have to show you. I have to. And he goes, you've done enough. And he says, I have to show you. The shofar is Abram saying, I'm going above and beyond. There's no question. All it is about you. And God says, you blow that shofar. You blow that shofar. Don't just blow it and hope and pray that it pushes my book. And you can click a couple of things and like hoping that it's almost over because the chazan's schlepping it out. You blow that shofar. I'm going to remember. It's someone that went all in on me. That for finally, after I created a world, generation after generation, this one person that said, it's about you. As the pasuk says, "Utruas melech bo." What is Rashi in the pasuk? Utruas melech. How does Rashi hitch up? How does Rashi explain utruas melech? Lashon tiva v'reyus. Trua means connection. Rosh Hashanah. We stand in front of God and say, "I'm not perfect, but you know what? I'm committed." I want kids from school. You need to pay for that. Sitting in shul, how many years? You think it's easy for that? You think of my sacrifices? But now I can stand in front of you, and now there's a day where I can show you, and I'm going to tell you that this is the year I am fully into you. And the question for the 2 more minutes we have left is, why don't we naturally feel that? Why don't we naturally have the Avraham Avinu bug?
So the answer that I believe is in a story that a friend told me.
I have a good friend of mine who works in an organization in Long Island. And I hate this term. And I'm only using it because of time. But this term is, I think, more detrimental than productive. He works with youth at risk. The term makes no sense.
We don't have enough time to describe it. Gets a call, tells me the story, gets a call one day.
Family, wonderful family, oldest, they had two boys, the oldest boys were real youth lucky. They were real excellent children. School came easy, friends came easy, life was totally fine. And they had a son afterwards, and a third or fourth son that struggled. It's tough to go to school when they say, and your brother did this.
Your brother's so smart. How many times can you hear that before you say, and I'm not?
So we started hanging out with the wrong crowd. Happens. Drugs, alcohol, late at night. Family's love and flesh.
One day, my friend gets a call from his mom.
Happened. He ran away. And he ain't coming home.
He goes, I got it. Smart guy, a couple of texts, a couple of friends, find where he's located, safe. The mom, he's by so-and-so's house, he says, she goes, I want him home, I want him home, I want him home. He goes out in the middle of the night, he picks him up, he drops his bag, the guy goes, I am not walking into that house.
He goes to your parents' club, he goes, I am not walking into my parents' house ever again. So he stays at his house, and for the next week, he plays shuttle diplomacy, Henry Kissinger, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
After a week of getting nowhere, he gets a phone call from the kid's dad.
He says, please come to the house. He comes to the house. The father comes down from the study, hands him the letter, goes, give this to my kid. Takes the letter, goes back to the house, hands it to the kid. The kid opens the letter, reads it, sighs, looks up and says, okay, I'm going home.
He goes, what was that? Like we're like Shem Hashem or something in there. Like, what did he put in there? So he gets in the car, drives him back.
Goes back into his house, and as he walked into his house, the letter had slipped from his pocket. Now it's front seat.
Now this kid's like, what do I do? I mean, this is the letter that, like, this is the letter of letters.
Should I give it back to him? Should I read it? Like, how could I not read it? So his curiosity gets best, and pulls out of the job,
parks his car, and he opens it, and this is what the letter said. It's a dear,
this is what the letter said. It's a dear son, but the kid's real name. I love you just for you. Nothing else. We miss you. We love you. forgive you. Please come home. Why don't we feel that love? Because deep down, we don't believe that He loves us just for us. He loves us if we're good. He loves us if we're clean and pure and righteous. He loves us when we do stuff. He loves us when we're in shul in the Eila time and we're screaming our guts out. He loves us when we're doing holy things. He loves the big guys. We know who He really loves. We deep down know that I'm just regular. I go to work for a living. I drive carpools. I'm a regular person. I have ups, I have downs. I have ins, I have outs. I am not part of His beloved. He doesn't carry around my picture and show people, this is my kid. This is my kid. Look, this is my kid. God doesn't do that about us. He hangs out with the big rabbis. And then maybe if we say some words in it for a minute, like, you know, we show up on the Eila time and all of a sudden I'm screaming my bread and he goes, oh, Charlie, I didn't know you're still part of the Jewish people. Oh, okay, fine. You could be a bane on you. Now, can you move away? There's a rabbi behind you. I can look at him. We feel at our core that He doesn't love us for us. He doesn't love us unconditionally. And if He doesn't love us for us, how in the world can I love Him right back just for me? The biggest mistake we make in life, and this is the biggest thing that's happening right now on the streets today with the kids. And it's all of us, because we all feel it, that we do not walk around with that pride, with that passion, with that confidence that the creator of the universe, which is a concept that we break our heads over, is in love with little old me. I was in my car with my son the other day, and we crossed over, and we had to go to Jersey, I'm not sure why. No, we had to go to Jersey, and I crossed over the GW, and every time I cross a bridge, I tell my kids, kid, look outside, look how beautiful Hashem made the world. All my kids think, realize how awesome Hashem is. My son, I'll never forget, he was still young, he was in school, he just learned how to dock it. He goes, Dad, you just said Hashem made that. Look at the Hudson. He goes, you know what's so funny? I have, in Yeshiva, we say every morning, Baruch Hashem. That guy, and that guy has to say nay. And I'm like, no, it's the same person. He goes, no. You don't know this, but in Yeshiva, I say the name, the guy named Hashem. He has the same name as the person who made that. And I'm like, he's not a guy. Second of all, same thing. He goes, wait. I'm like, uh-huh. Guys, that is awesome. And then being a kid from like our time, his next comment is, can I borrow your cell phone and call my friends? And I'm like, not to get married by that. You know what I'm saying? Yo, Rosh Hashanah. If you want to know the abode of Rosh Hashanah, because I'll tell it to you. It's Ahava. If you sit on your couch and you begin to wrap your head around the fact that the creator of humanity is in love with you. It's not fear. It's not anxiety. You're going home to mom and dad. It's warmth. When you get that, when you stand in Rosh Hashanah, you know, Kippur, we deal with our ups and downs. When we stand in Rosh Hashanah and you say, Hamelech, when you start being before you get to my kingdom, when you feel that, you've been prepped for a month of Ahava. We walk in and what we think is death. I want to read to you two of the, I think, the most important quotes I've ever read in my entire life. This is from a Rav named the son of a Rebbe that he wrote to call the Seder Shalom. And in here, he gives us the secret to how to get into the Book of Life. I carry this around in my pocket with me for 40 straight days. I'll read it. Mamar Chazal said, Gimel Svarim Niftachim to Rosh Hashanah. Three, we know this before, right? Three books open Rosh Hashanah. Tzadikim Gimurim, Nechtavim V'Nechtamim La'alta L'chaim. This is where we instinctively say, okay, not me, what does everyone else do? Hi, what happens? Shepostam Shlosha Sefarim Chadashim. Every year, God opens three new books. Shekol Echad Roshet Es Atma, Lishona HaHadasha, Be'eze Shirotzen. And He takes His pen and He hands it to you and says, put your name in the book you want to be. Rosh Hashanah isn't an evaluation. Rosh Hashanah is a self-evaluation. God goes, which book do you want to be in this year, honey? It's yours. Here's the pen. Here are the books. Write your name in the book you want. If you want to be considered part of the tzaddikim, what does that mean?
That you fulfill your tafkid and your purpose. You look at God and go, you know what? You have me. You're getting me with my ups and downs. You're getting me. But you know what? This is me not going to sit around being sinful this year. I am yours. We give him that, he says. Al Yaday Zeh. This isn't Charlie Ryan. This is a real guy. You see the show. This is it. Nechtamim v'nechtamim la'alta l'chaim. This is how you get into the book of life. You look him in the eye and say, I am yours. But you get it. Ubeinonim and Rishonim. And what are those people doing? Hainu. These are the people that show up and go, you don't have me, but here's the deal. I'll do whatever you want. I'll do some assaults, I'll do this, I'll do that. Just get out. Hopefully he's done quickly. I can't let this be over. Nod, nod, nod. You got it. And I'm going to take 3 steps back and I get back to my life. And God goes, seriously, we're playing this game again? I know what you're doing. Really? How many years are we doing this together? Mimela, Elohim Tafkidim Bolam. God says, you can't kiss your way into the book. Last quote. From Tzimai. Kibidoreinu. Every generation has a purpose. We're alive today, 2020. The purpose of the people that were alive in the 1940s and 30s was to survive. Those that were alive in the 40s and 50s in Israel specifically was to build. Those that were here, and many of you know this before, as you got older, you built this shul, you built this community. We are the benefits, we are the beneficiaries of your work. Now we look around in so much institutions. Every door has a tafkid. Every year, every decade, there's a reason for that. There's something that we're after. There's an ikar avoda that God is pushing us towards. What's the avoda now? What is our nation's task now? To you mind. Keep it the rain of ikar avoda to the avoda of Shal Shabbat. You know what avoda is now? Increase the force of love. The score to remember as Godel Ahavas Hashem. The enormousness of Avas Hashem of Son to us. This isn't fluff. This isn't like less intellectual than actually reading something and faking it. This is real. This is marriage. This is what it feels like with your family and friends. This is the hardest thing in the world, which is why it's the greatest. Moshe Chasim Baal Shem Tov, so this is what Baal Shem Tov says. The contemplation of his love makes him out of us. This is the easy path laying out of us. This is our task. This is where the sweat comes in. This is where we sleep over. This is where our minds can't fathom it. This is the avoda of the month. Chazal say from the beginning, Elo, Ah. If we bring it into ourselves, if we walk in, and we're going to walk in, it's going to happen. Not hopefully. In a few days, this key is going to hit the door. If we spend the time now remembering, reminding, inculcating, this feeling of, oh my God, he loves me unconditionally. And I have to walk in, and I wasn't perfect, and I'll work on myself. But I have to walk in and remember, he's looking for my commitment. He's looking for me. Something about me that he wants. I don't know what that is, but that's what I'm going to be thinking about. If we walk into this period of time with that mentality, I'll be dead. This is true life. We don't enter into the book. We become it. My bracha to all of us that we do this. We feel this way. My hope and prayer more than anything in the world, I've got to tell you, is that God this year comes down, and what he sees is a nation of people that are cheering daddy's home. With all our problems and all our ups and our downs, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. And if we had this, and if we taught it to our children, and to our friends and our family, we should be zoked up for this, and have a year of good things, and bracha, and mazel, and shalom, and chayim, and we'd be zoked up to continue to have shirim like this. Yerushalayim Meir HaKodesh, thank you so much for listening. Have a good night.